Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Hey everyone, it's Jesse Green here. Welcome back to SavvyDentist.com and to the Savvy Dentist Podcast. It's terrific to have your company for another episode of the show. And today, I'm joined by someone who I've been looking forward to talking to for a very long time. I've had the pleasure of knowing Dr. Andrew Hong now for some years, and watching him grow, watching his practice grow has been nothing short of remarkable. And on top of Andrew's obvious accomplishments, both in a commercial sense and in a clinical sense, he's perhaps one of the nicest human beings I've had the pleasure of meeting. And so I'm delighted to have him on the podcast with us today. So Andrew, thanks for making the time, mate. How are you in Melbourne today?
I'm very well, thank you, Jesse. How are you?
Really well, thanks, mate. We were talking a little bit off air about sports and footy and cricket and all the rest of it, and you're an avid sports follower, and we have many a conversation about sports. I just wanted to start the conversation today, perhaps just on a slightly personal note, why is sports such a fascinating topic for you? What is it about sports that you love?
I think there's a lot of lessons that we can learn from sport. Quite often in business, we don't train very much and we perform a lot. And with sports, it's the other way around. You know, they practice all the basic skills leading up to the game, so they're well-versed and quite honed with it. And so just being able to watch my two boys get involved with the sport and watching them grow has given me that impetus to follow along their development, and also just watching. I just love watching the national team. Anything that Australia plays in, I quite enjoy watching.
So what are the sports that capture your attention most? I know a couple of them, but are there any ones I'm not aware of?
No, just cricket and rugby are probably my big ones.
Yeah.
But I'm also now quite taken to watching the AFL football as well, because my youngest boy is into the AFL footy, and just watching him develop. Ball sports, it's all very simple. I think there's two main things that you want to have. It's that you want to have the ball, and you want to have the ball in the right areas. That's really the two key things. And so I think a lot of what we can do with work, thinking back to work, is if we do the right things and we do them often enough, we're going to get somewhere.
Mm. There's a very well-known hockey player, and I'm not a hockey aficionado, so I'm probably going to butcher this. I think it was Wayne Gretzky, and he is famous for saying that he skates to where the puck is going to be, not to where someone thinks he should be or whatever. So I'm curious to understand from a business point of view, Andrew, you mentioned at the beginning that you think that, well, and actually I don't think it's a thought, it's an observation, and I believe it to be true as well, and that is, sporting teams practice a lot more than they perform, whereas in business we perform a lot more than we practice. Why do you think that is in business, that we don't spend the time practicing? Is it because we're so busy doing the day-to-day, or where do you see the value of training and practice in your dental practice?
I think there is that busyness factor, and there's a thought that maybe it's the wrong thought, but it's certainly there, that we'll just wing it.
Mm.
We'll turn up on the day, we'll see what happens, and I'm sure that when we get into that groove, we'll be right. What I have found is that sometimes when you are stressed and you are under pressure and you're running late and all those sorts of things, sometimes your thoughts go out the window.
Mm.
And you sort of just have to go along with it. But if you train beforehand and you don't have to think about it, it seems to come out much better.
Sticking with the sporting metaphors for a moment, recently the first State of Origin was on. Now, my apologies for any New South Wales listeners or New South Wales fans here, but being a rabid Queensland follower, we saw Reece Walsh get taken out, and we saw the ensuing changes in the team. And what was really interesting, I believe, is they didn't plan necessarily for that particular someone's going to take out that particular player, but they did have a lot of training around what happens if we lose one of our key players, which meant that the substitute player, Selwyn Cobbo, came in and was able to fit in pretty well. So what I'm hearing you say is that if we're going to be professional in the way that we approach things, we've got to train consistently, we've got to train the right way, because we don't rise to the occasion. Typically, we fall back to the level of our training. Have I paraphrased what you're trying to say?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Beautifully put.
I wanted to ask you a bit about your practice, Andrew. How long has it been now that you've owned your practice?
It's a good question. I think since about 2010, so it's about 14 years now.
So what was that motivated you to jump into private practice as an owner rather than staying in the associate space?
Okay, this is another funny conversation. I thought that because I was in the business for a while, working as an associate, I thought, okay, now it's time for me to take over the reins and build something that will let me take control of things. And so it's that typical Michael Gerber e-myth thing of, yep, okay, I'm good at the hands-on bit, so I must be good at the rest of it. And so when I got into practice ownership, I found it was complete. I was completely out of my depth.
Yeah, wow.
It wasn't until my accountant actually rang me and said, Andrew, if you don't fix this up very, very quickly, this upcoming tax return might be the last tax return that I ever do for you.
Gosh.
And that was my biggest wake-up call.
Wow.
And so I wasn't looking at the numbers. I wasn't doing any of that. I was just simply turning up. And as long as I had enough money in the bank account to sort of pay the bills, I was thinking everything was going quite well.
Okay.
He questioned me. He said, so, Andrew, how many new patients are you seeing? I had no clue. How much per new patient are you sort of generating out of that? I had no idea what was going on. And so that started a journey of, okay, well, given I don't know those things, I probably should start learning. And so one thing led to another, and eventually we found you, Jesse. So listening to the podcast for a little while, and eventually something clicked. And the rest, I guess, you know. That was the biggest wake-up call for me, Jesse, just knowing that, wow, potentially this could be not going to end very well.
Is it okay if we just linger on that for a second? And it's really nice that you listen to the podcast and now you get to pay it forward by being on the podcast. So again, thank you for spending your time with us today. I'm really, really appreciative, actually. But I want to go back to that phone call from the accountant. Like, was that totally out of the blue? Did you have any inkling that things weren't going the way they ought to be? Or was it just like, oh my God, this is totally out of left field for me?
It was totally out of left field. Because wow. I wasn't looking at the numbers. I wasn't doing any of those things that I should have been doing. And it came as a shock.
Mm.
I think I spent a fair bit of time trying to digest that.
Yeah, because that's an emotional phone call, that one.
Absolutely. I didn't want to accept it at first because I thought, no, how can that be? I've got money in the account. No, maybe it could be better, but, you know, we certainly don't look that dire. But it taught me a lesson, Jesse. It taught me a lesson.
Mm-hmm.
That I need to look at the numbers going forward. So, yeah.
Okay, so you get that phone call, you have that conversation with your accountant, and I know that there was a gap, obviously, between that phone call and us working together. What was your first thought, first reaction? You know, did you and Jane, your lovely wife, have a conversation about it? What were you thinking? What were you feeling? What were your first next steps? Because I'm asking that because there'll be someone listening to this podcast, perhaps identifying with that exact same feeling.
My first emotional reaction was, oh, I'm not cut out for this.
Yeah.
Maybe I should just give up on it, go back to working as an associate. But there's lots of information out there, Jesse. And I think I went back to the previous owner had worked with another company, and I went back to looking at his documents that he'd left on the server.
Yeah.
And it had all those things about new patients and where they came from and all that sort of thing. So I reached out to a few people. There's a person that I worked for a number of years and we still keep in contact, which is really great.
Yep.
So together with that, I had a conversation with Jane and said, I just got a phone call from the accountant and it's not looking that great. And Jane being Jane, she's always very supportive and just said, look, yes, Andrew, just go out and do what you have to do. Okay. She's always been that way.
Yep.
She says, you know, the two boys, they're my babies. The practice, that's your baby. So you just nurture and look after it how you think you need it. And so I did go around to a couple of the other practice management, sort of did a few short courses here and there.
Yep.
Gradually started to build a bit of a sense of, okay, these are the important numbers that I need to take care of.
Mm.
And so what has changed between now and back then was that when the accountant asked me what the new patient numbers are, I can tell him.
Yeah, yeah. And you can tell him what they're worth on a dollar basis.
That's right. So that's what was the biggest change, was that we started to transition to being more of a business owner than just a technician.
It's a really common story, actually, Andrew. So you're definitely not Robinson Crusoe in that situation because, I mean, none of us learn or finance or business management or anything at uni, certainly unless it's changed radically since I was at university, but as far as I'm aware, that's still the case. And what's really interesting is starting up a dental practice is it's a fairly capital-intensive exercise. You spend a bit of dough up front to kind of get either purchase it or to get started in your own one. You're going to be spending some money. And so getting a handle on those skills is something that eventually we all come to realize that we need to. I wanted to talk to you a little bit about those early years of practice ownership, not just from the financial side, but from the team side, from the marketing side. What other things did you learn? Obviously, you learned you had to kind of know your numbers. And what I think you've identified really well, actually, and I don't want to gloss past this because I think this is really important. You spoke about the topic of identity, and perhaps not as overtly as I'm describing it now, but identifying as the technician, as the dentist, as the person who does the drilling and filling, but now having to put on this other identity of business owner. How do you feel about those two identities coexisting? Because I know some people struggle with that. And then I'll ask you about the other things you had to learn as well.
No, I still sometimes struggle with it. It's a little bit like the Jekyll and Hyde thing at times.
Yeah.
Because you, like we said at the start, you sort of fall back to what you know best.
Mm.
And I've been mostly a dentist and a technician for most part of that time. And so I tend to fall back to that when things are not going well.
Mm.
There is that getting out of your comfort zone and having to do something different, think differently in order to make things change. If you keep staying where you are, things don't change very much.
No, they don't. With that in mind, Andrew, you've taken on this new identity. You've tried on this new hat. And you do still obviously switch between the clinical hat and the business owner hat, and that's normal, that's fine. When you started taking over the business, and obviously we mentioned, you know, you had to get a handle on finances and numbers and learning what the numbers tell you, the stories that they tell. What did you learn about people and team? How was that transition for you? Because that's another area that sometimes takes a bit of adjustment.
Absolutely. I was fortunate enough that the previous team members came along with us. Yeah. Over a period of maybe a year while he was still working here, things seemed to be okay. And when he made that decision not to work anymore, I started to see some fracturing with things. So we started to see some things along the lines of maybe loyalty would be a best way of describing it.
Okay.
Some people were very loyal with him and they made their decision to leave when he left or not long afterwards.
Sure.
And so then I had a fairly stable team for a period of time until COVID. After COVID, it kind of changed a few things as well. And then we found ourselves in a place where we needed to employ some people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the biggest lessons that I learned over that time was that it wasn't about just writing an ad and putting an ad out there saying dental assistant wanted or front desk person needed. Here are the details, please call. And I have to admit that I did that.
Yeah.
I wrote those ads and I got crickets.
Okay.
So we swapped that around a little bit under your guidance and we turned it around so that it became almost like a marketing exercise, Jesse, where we started to look at, now, what are the good things that we have here? What are the really nice things that we have about us that might appeal to people? And so once we started writing ads that way, we actually got quite a bit of interest, almost too much interest at times, which is not a bad thing.
Now, we call that a champagne problem.
Absolutely. And we've been able to find some really nice people to work with again. So very grateful for that.
I'm glad that went really well, mate. That's fantastic. What did you have to learn about yourself, though? Where did you have to grow as a leader? Because, again, typically when you associate, you get to just sit in your four walls of your surgery, focus on the immediate surroundings of the patient, your assistant, and not much more beyond the end of your nose. But as the leader of the business, you've got to take a more holistic view. How did you find that adjustment and what did you learn about yourself in that transition?
I think initially it's scary.
Yeah.
Because you're going out of something that you don't normally go to.
Mm.
And so it's uncomfortable. Mm. It's not really something that I enjoy doing, managing people or talking to people and that sort of thing. I'm fairly quiet generally, but I learned that had to change.
Mm.
One of the really really good things that I still do today, and I found it helped me a lot, was I actually keep a little file on every single person. I start to, with our conversations with the team, I start to get a semblance of what things they like and what they don't like.
It's clever.
And so that comes into play when we get to the end of the year, or if there's something that I want to reward somebody with, you can kind of go, okay, well, they like this, but they don't like that. So you can sort of craft your reward so that they actually are going to receive something that they like. It's a little bit like the, I forget what it's called now, it's that love language.
Oh, the appreciation, the language is appreciation, yeah.
That's right.
That's so fantastic.
That was good. That was good to do that.
So we can distill this down for people listening, just day-to-day, you're having conversations with the various team members. Someone says to you, hey, Andrew, I had a great weekend. I went off to see the Melbourne Comedy Festival or something like that. And you go, huh, that's a little mental note. I'm going to go back to the file of, you know, whoever the team member is and go, they like comedy or something like that.
Correct.
Mate, that is genius. Great job. Love it. And when you now give those rewards and, you know, gifts or whatever it happens to be to your team, what's the feedback been as a result of that?
Been amazing. It's been amazing because it's so they sort of say, gee, you should actually take note of that. Did you actually take note of that and write that down somewhere? And I said, well, I'm at that stage now where I have to write things down.
Yeah, I've been at that stage for a while too, mate, but that's clever. That's really clever. One of the things I've always admired about you, Andrew, lots of things, but one thing that I'm really kind of resonating with, as you've gone through this practice ownership journey, there's been moments of discomfort, and like we all have that, right? And but one of the things I've always known about you is your willingness to embrace that discomfort and your willingness to step outside the comfort zone. And I wanted to ask you, has that always been part of who you are in terms of you like, because learning to run a practice is just a skill, right? And just like learning a clinical skill. Have you always been such a willing participant in learning and growing? Is that something that is part of, you know, Andrew Hong's DNA?
I think it's what I fall back to.
Ah.
It's one of those things where if I don't know what's going on, or if I don't know something, I want to find out. There's a curious mind in there.
Yeah, okay.
And it stands as well sometimes with dentistry, but it drives people batty as well when you sort of sit there and go, but why? Why is that happening?
Yeah.
You just want to know why something's happening and how you can sort it out. So I guess in some ways, at early days, it wasn't so evident that I would want to step out of the comfort zone.
Yeah.
I like to stay where I am, you know, the nice little cozy environment that you find yourself in and you think, what would I come out of this for? But over time, you start to learn that if you don't evolve with things, you don't tend to grow.
Mm.
You stay very stagnant. And for many years, I think our practice remained very stagnant. And that's because I wasn't growing. I was keeping the status quo. And so once we made that switch and started to change, we noticed that the production went up, the types of dentistry that we were doing went up, and team members seem to be happy. Well, as far as I know at the moment, they seem very happy, which is great.
Yeah.
Makes my life easier when people are happy.
Yep.
And there's a certain vibe in the place as well. When there's happy people working, you know, good things happen.
100%. Again, kudos to you, because outside of that comfort zone is the growth zone, as you know, and you've done a lot of growing internally. And, you know, we talk about this be, do, have model. It's not a model that we invented by any stretch of the imagination. I don't know who to attribute it to, but who do we need to be so we can do the things we need to do in order to have the things we want to have? And as I said at the beginning, I think you've embraced that very fully and you're thinking about, well, who do I need to be? What do I need to do so I can achieve the things I want to achieve? I just really want to commend you for that. I'm curious, Andrew, coming back to sports for a second, you mentioned to me a little while ago on one of many conversations, you're doing, I think, a family road trip with Jane and the boys, and you ended up in is it a cricket museum somewhere you ended up, or was it a cricket ground, or where was it?
It was a sports museum.
Sports museum.
Victoria. Come back from Echuca, and we thought, oh, we'll drive through this little museum because both the boys are very much into their cricket and footy. And so I can't remember the name of the gentleman that set it up, but he was very, very influential in the Puma company.
Mm.
So he's, you know, got all this memorabilia from people that went under that banner. So I think Adam Gilchrist and I think Shane Warne might have been there.
Okay, wow.
Got a few of the basketballers. There's Cheryl McMahon, the netballer, some stuff there. I think she was quite close to him because I think they came from the same town. So it was nice just to have a little family outing with the kids and Jane, and went through the sports museum. And then while we were in Rochester, we went looking for lunch. And there's another famous person that came from there, and Ron Idles, so the good cop. There's a mural there, Jesse, and his father, you know, there's a picture of him, and then the two sons. And then what caught my eye was this particular quote that Mr. Idles had, and that was the three A's.
Could you share it?
Will do. And the first A is to accept the situation. So any problem that you come across, the first thing you need to do is accept the situation. The second A is to adapt to it.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third A is to achieve what you can. And I thought that was really powerful. I remember thinking, when I get back to Melbourne, I'm going to share this with people. And I remember I had a conversation with you. I go, I've got to tell Jesse, this is amazing.
It is, and it's amazingly simple but powerful.
Absolutely. And since that day, I've applied it to just about any situation where I've encountered a problem, found it works. It's brilliant.
Can you give us an example of how you've been able to apply it?
Well, around COVID, that was the classic one for us in Victoria here.
Yes, you poor buggers in Victoria.
That's it. And we've got a lockdown. Okay, we've got to accept that situation. We've got a lockdown happening.
Yep.
What do we need to do? What changes do we need to make to just make sure that these things keep happening? Okay, well, let's look at what procedures we can do. Okay, well, those are the procedures we set on that. And then we just roll it out, achieve what we can. And I just found that sort of kept us in good stead.
Just before we move on from this, I think this is a really important point. What Andrew's has shared, I think, is immensely powerful. And I remember you sharing it with me when you got back from that particular trip, or maybe on that trip. But sometimes when things are really simple, we've overlooked the power of that simplicity, and we can easily dismiss R3As as a nice little acronym: accept, adapt, and achieve what you can. I'd really like to just ask everyone to kind of linger on that thought for a little bit and to perhaps take Andrew's words to heart and see how you can use that in your own circumstances to overcome whatever it is you're looking to overcome. Because there's always some kind of adversity. There's always some sort of challenge. I just want to make sure that we don't kind of gloss over that, because it is so deceptively simple but multi-layered, multifaceted, and unbelievably powerful. So, again, Andrew, on that particular topic, what have you learned about yourself by applying those three A's? I'm always looking for there's always so much introspection that goes on around that stuff.
Absolutely. I think prior to that, whenever we had a problem, you'd linger on it, Jesse.
Yes.
You'd sit there and you beat yourself up, or you'll beat something up, or you'll get upset, and you spend hours on end thinking, why has this happened?
Yeah.
Whereas most of the time, you know what you have to do. So it kind of snaps you out of that downward spiral. You go, mm-hmm. Okay, well, this is what's happened. I can't change it. You know, it could be somebody's resigned. Okay, someone's resigned. Okay, I can get upset about it, but it's not going to do anything.
Mm.
It's not going to help. And so step one, accept that that's the situation.
Yep.
Okay, what do we need to do? Well, I've got to find someone.
Yep.
I've got to replace that person. Or is there someone within our midst that can cover that shift for the time being, if that's a possibility? And then just get out there and achieve what you can.
Do you feel that's brought you a sense of peace, having that framework to think through? Like, because it sounds like before there might have been a bit of ruminating on a problem, which can lead to a bit of stress and frustration and all those other things. Do you feel a bit more at peace with things?
Yes, absolutely. Because you just got something to fall back onto.
Yeah.
It's always nice to have those little frameworks to fall back onto.
It's a great way of organizing your thinking. And I'm curious to understand, have your team, or I don't know if the team have been around long enough to know Andrew pre-three A's or not, but anyone, or Jane, has she or anyone else noticed any other differences in your ability to respond to things?
I think Vivek has.
Yeah, great.
I think back in the days before this, I would ruminate on things and get quite upset and maybe wouldn't know what to do. about something. Nice. Because nowadays something would happen and we just go, okay, well, that's that. And away we go. What's next?
Love it. So, Andrew, I want to ask a little bit about your practice now, because we did a bit of a look at what it was like when you first started, some of the challenges that you've encountered, that we all encounter, and obviously you've been able to overcome and get through those. Tell us a little bit about your practice now. What's the style of the practice now?
Okay. So it's a general practice. There's three chairs. When we first started, I think we were only using two of them. We've got to a stage where we're pretty much using the three of them now. We've expanded the amount of services that we do, and that's come from training with various things. We do offer the teeth straightening orthodontic sort of things,
yep.
Some more restorative type procedures. And so they've probably been the mainstay of what we do nowadays, along with the general basic dentistry that comes with it. The team structure is we've got a couple of dental assistants, we've got a couple of front desks, and we've also got now a full-time oral health therapy department as well. So that was something that was lacking back then too. We just had part-time, I think, back then.
Yep.
So looking after people's basic oral health and being able to restore them as we need to, if that's what they would like.
Yep.
And one of the things that we found was quite useful particularly with the kids, was being able to offer teeth straightening. We find that with our particular patient avatar, we're looking at that mum. Mum's kind of our ideal person, that young mum with a couple of kids. And so what we found is that sometimes with mums, they look towards sending the kids in, and if you do a good job with the kids, then they'll come as well. So
yes,
been a good avenue for bringing new families into the practice.
Everything you've described there, yes, you've got some more, I guess, advanced restorative skills. You've got orthodontics in your practice, but there's still a lot of general dentistry in there. Is that fair?
Correct.
And the reason I bring that up is because sometimes I think there's a perception that, I know we keep going back to sporting metaphors because you and I both like sporting metaphors, and I'm not a basketballer. And for those that have not met me in person, as soon as you see how short I am, you'll know why I'm not a basketballer. But the beauty of what you've described there is you get to take your easy shots. You get to go to that free throw line and sink the easy shots, day in, day out. That's your bread and butter, and so on and so forth. And then every now and then, when it's appropriate, the orthodontic case comes along and you get to take the three-pointer, or when a complex rehab comes along, you take that three-pointer. But you're not building your practice looking for, high-end, complex dentistry and, high-risk, high-stress procedures all day, every day with no respite in there. Is that?
Absolutely.
And I think what's really interesting around that, Andrew, is if we look at your practice now compared to where it was, you've built out this suite of treatments that we just spoke about. You've got a wonderful team culture because you've worked very hard on that. You know those languages of appreciation. You keep your notes about your team. You've now understood your numbers as well. So you're starting to, well, not starting, you are very competent with your numbers. You're able to understand, though, what works, what's not working, and if it's not working, how to get back on track so it does work. How much peace of mind, sense of security does that give you now? Because what I want to say is you've become very, very good at doing, and I mean this as a high compliment, of doing ordinary things extraordinarily well and consistently. And to me, that's something that is really, really well done. So I wanted to ask you, how does it feel now compared to the early days?
Feel more relaxed. You can sleep at night, Jesse.
Hey, well, that's always good.
Thinking about things, yeah.
Yeah.
I think, 10, 14 years ago, whatever it might be, you'd sort of sit there at night time stressing about things. Am I going to have a full book tomorrow, or am I going to have a full book next week? Whereas nowadays you don't stress about those sorts of things as much.
Yeah.
You still do on occasions, but not as much. But you also got that trust in the people around you as well. So that's something that I'm still working with at the moment, is getting to that level where I guess, at the moment the practice has a heavy reliance on me being there.
Yes.
And so that's my next thing that I'm working on now, is how we can shift that so that I can go away a little bit more often.
Absolutely. What specifically do you think is the next step? Because again, there's people listening to this going, hey, I've got a great practice. It's going really well. I'm pretty happy with the stage. We've got a nice team. I'm doing okay financially, but you know, goodness, I wouldn't mind to just take my foot off the pedal from a time perspective. I still want to keep my income, but I don't want to have it all come from my own exertion. If you were offering some thoughts to people in that situation, what would be your first or second thought about, you know, these are some things to think about?
Some things to think about. You need to get some good people around you. I think that's important. But before that, having that foundation piece of having some good systems and processes in place so that when these people do come, these superstars do come on board, they've got something that they can follow.
Mm.
There's a training component to it that's very, very important to get people up to speed very quickly because one of the things that you can lose when you do change over a person is that it may be the information that that person carried in their head. It might be the way they did something. And so to be able to document that down and have that as a, I guess, if we go back to the sporting analogies, it's like having a playbook.
Yeah, 100%.
Having a playbook. These is what happens when this happens.
Yep.
This is how we manage this. That's a couple of things that are really important, but also going back to the change of mindset as well.
Mm.
I think for many a year now, I think one of the biggest challenges that I'm having at the moment is that it's always been about me.
Mm-hmm.
Andrew's the one that does this and Andrew's the one that does that. And so it's shifting that mindset to go, okay, well, I'm not that person anymore. I'm not the person to come to if something was to go amiss.
Mm-hmm.
And so teaching people how to think like you and how to react like you in those situations, I think becomes even more important so that when you aren't there, things can continue to go.
Yeah, 100%. And a common trap that people fall into is they become, the reason so many people don't make the leap that you're currently making and you have made and still making, but a common trap people fall into is becoming really, I guess, I want to use the word addicted carefully and cautiously, but addicted to the personal exertion income and seeing time away from the chair as lost opportunity. If I take time away from the chair to train my team, that's cost me X dollars in lost revenue. I think that's kind of short-term thinking. It's like a gear change, I think, going from one level of being the technician to being the business owner. And you know, like with any gear change, for those of us old enough to remember learning to drive a manual car, for the younger people, just go with the story. And for the really young people learning, it'll be like fully self-driving cars soon. So this metaphor has only got a limited shelf life. But anyway, learning to change gears in a car, you have to engage the clutch. You do ease off the accelerator a little bit and then you shift gears and you can re-accelerate. But the business re-accelerates without you having to pedal so hard. And so I really like that mindset shift you articulated, and you spoke about training, and I like the metaphor of becoming a training institution. So with that in mind, Andrew, and having the systems in place to train, which is, again, really important, what have you learned about training over the last few years now that you've been going through this process of, you're really developing some strong processes and systems? You've obviously built a strong team. Have you factored training into what you do now so that we're getting more to be like the sporting team, so we train a bit more and get that ratio different?
Thankfully, when we had downtime a few years ago,
yeah,
we were able to train really, really well because there wasn't anything else to do. So we went through the processes and we checked off to make sure things were as they should be.
Mm.
Or if they weren't, then we would modify that to reflect what they should be. No, this doesn't answer the question, but I still remember somebody saying to me, why are you taking that time to train your staff? And I know this has come up a fair bit in things. Mm. It might have been Richard Branson or somebody that said, and for me it was I actually was reading the Beechworth Bakery.
Ah, yes, famous business, yeah. Name,
Peter O'Toole, I think it is. He talked about training and he said, what happens if you don't train somebody was kind of the gist of where he was going. And, you know, a lot of the time people may question, why are you spending that time? I mean, this person might end up leaving you, might not stay for very long and all those sorts of things. And I think the premise of what he said was, what happens if this person hangs around?
Yeah,
and you're
exactly.
stuck with this person. So you might as well train them. And if they leave, well, they take that training with them. But if they stayed, then you'd benefit from it anyway. But it was just an interesting aside with taking that time and that effort to do something like that. And again, I think it's a mind shift change that you need to plan and think, okay, well, if I treat this person well and if they really like what they're doing, they're more than likely to hang around for a bit. So you might as well train them.
100 million percent, mate. I'm of the view that how quickly you can take someone from being a relative rookie to being a relative pro for that particular role, whatever that entails, is a major competitive advantage if you can do that swiftly. You know, if you can get people fairly green and have them become really good at what they do quickly, I reckon that sets your business up very, very, very well because it gives you confidence as well. So, you know, one of the things that a lot of practice owners kind of stress about is, oh, if I lose so-and-so, you know, I'm in a pickle basically. And therefore, when so-and-so starts to perhaps muck up or push boundaries or whatever, we end up compromising in ways that we don't want to because we don't want to lose this person's skill set. But if we have confidence that we can find people well, recruit people really well like you've been doing and train them really well also like you've been doing, then it gives confidence to know, well, hang on a second, you know, if this particular person, you know, obviously everyone has a bad day from time to time, but if this person becomes someone who's going to bust my chops all day every day, maybe this is not the best place for them and that's okay, but I now feel confident enough to make that decision. Is that something that you've experienced as well?
I have. We used to have those ones where people that knew things or were very proficient at things but didn't necessarily want to pull the line.
Yeah.
You struggled to say, oh, I should really get rid of them, but I don't want to. I can't. Because where am I going to find that other person with that set of skills or that set of knowledge? And so you're absolutely right. I think once you've got that process in place and you've got some good systems to fall back on, you've got a nice training platform, you don't worry about those things as much.
Yeah.
You still worry about people, but you don't worry about them as much. If you head off the other way, we'll find someone to replace. That's
life. And that's okay. Yeah. And the show goes on, right?
Correct.
Yeah. Mate, love that. Andrew, just to cast our eyes into the future a little bit, thinking about a past, present, future kind of time frame. What's on the horizon for you, mate? What does Andrew Hong's life look like in the next 3 to 5 years, personally, professionally, in any way that you feel comfortable sharing? What's on the horizon for you, my friend?
I'd like to take my foot off, as we've previously mentioned.
Yeah.
I'd love to get an associate or some other people to sort of do some more of the dental stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've developed a real passion for photography.
I've seen your photos. They're really good.
So it's just something that happened again during the lockdown with nothing better to do. So grab your camera that you're not using in the dental surgery and put a lens on it and go and have a look at what's out there in the world. And so that's something that I've been working with for probably the last few months, attending a few courses and things.
Yeah, good.
And just looking at that.
Okay.
And also just seeing where the kids go as well.
Both happy
the
days.
Boys, like I said, quite good with their cricket. I think while we're on one of the workshops, actually, the one just most recently in Brisbane.
Mm-hmm. Business systems we spoke about there.
Yes. And I remember Jane and I had, it was more my idea, but I said, I've really got to walk to Suncorp Stadium.
Right.
Just have to go and look at it with my own eyes. And so we walked there, and as we were walking there, Jesse, get a text message from Lachlan.
Yeah.
It's just the most basic message as people with teenage sons would know. It's the very, very simple responses you get from them.
Yeah.
One word. In this case, it was one picture, Jesse.
Oh, okay.
We could see his cricket whites.
Yes.
In his hand.
Yes.
And it was a pink ball.
Right.
We go, okay, well, he's obviously done something with the ball.
Yeah.
And so we just question, what's with the ball, Lachlan? He goes, I just got 5 for 17.
Oh, wow. Wow.
And so one of the, I guess you could call it a regret, is, you know, with me busting my chops with work and things, is I've missed out a fair bit on the kids. And so one of the things I'd love to do over the next little while is to find some time make some time for myself to be able to go and watch them play.
Do you know, it's really interesting, Andrew, and thank you for sharing that, because there's a lot of people who'll be thinking that as well, but you are closer than you think. And in fact, I know you're already making some gains and getting traction in that space, but for anyone else listening to this, you're closer than you think too. It's simple but not easy. The concepts are not hard to understand academically or intellectually. It's actually pretty straightforward. Emotionally, can be very hard to actually implement, because there's all manner of different things that crop up, and we all have our own biases and values. But I would say to anyone listening to this, if you really want to get off the tools, A, you want to make sure your cash flow is rock solid, right? Because going back to the changing gear metaphor, if you get off the tools too quickly and you don't have enough, you know, throughput your practice, then it's like trying to start the car in fourth gear from the traffic lights. It just labors, right? It takes a long time to get going. So you want to have revs in the engine and you want to shift gears and all that sort of stuff. But you're closer than you think, and usually it's about a 2 to 3 year journey in my experience, having worked with lots of people around that now. It's a couple of years. Sometimes it's shorter, sometimes it's longer, and it's usually longer based on where the starting point is. And in my case, it probably took a bit longer because I had to undo some learning. I had to undo some thought processes. I had to get away from a few things. I had to relearn some things I'd learned as a kid. So, you know, it doesn't have to be 2 to 3 years. It can be longer, it can be shorter, but getting those systems in place, getting that structure in place with your team, again, really, really important. So, mate, I've got no doubt that, you know, over the next, you know, few months, you'll start to be spending more time while it's winter as we're recording this, and maybe the footy grounds at the moment, and when summer comes around, back at the cricket pitches.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, Andrew, as we wrap up, mate, first I want to say thank you for being so generous and being so open. As I said in the introduction, you're one of the kindest, nicest, decent human beings I've had the pleasure to meet. And I think that really shines through with your openness and willingness to share. But I wanted to impose upon you one last time, if I may. If you were giving advice to Andrew, the early stage practice owner, or if you could go back in time and think, what do I wish I'd known, or all those sorts of things, however you want to phrase it, because I think there'll be something here for others. What's the one piece of advice or two pieces of advice that you wish you'd had a bit earlier?
The bit of advice that I wish I had earlier, I'll tell my younger self, would be that you're not alone. I think sometimes with what we do, when we start to take on business ownership, and as you become more successful, you find that you become more isolated. And sometimes you also think that you're the only drongo with that particular issue.
There's plenty of us drongos out there, mate. Oh,
absolutely. Well, we're trying to make our way, aren't we?
Yep.
And so my advice would be to surround yourself with good people. Find a good group of people that are wanting to do something similar to what you want to do.
Mm.
And that's what I found with finding Savvy Dentist.
Thank you, mate.
Awesome group of people in there. And every time you meet with someone, you either inspire or you learn something that you didn't know.
Yeah.
But more importantly than not, you find that you're not the only person that has those issues.
Mm.
Someone else has already done it.
Yeah.
It's already been there. And so what can accelerate your learning is by learning what other people have dealt with that particular situation, so that you don't have to stumble through it and make the same falls.
Mm.
And I think that's been invaluable, just having a good group of people that all want something the same. Might be in different locations, might have different reasons for why they want to do something, but it's amazing when you get a good group of people together, how that can propel you forwards. So if I could tell my younger self that, surround yourself earlier with a group of people, maybe I wouldn't have had that conversation with the accountant. So
who knows?
But then again, that's the journey, isn't it?
Oh, 100%, mate. And thanks for those kind words. I'm just going to talk about our community for a moment, because I feel incredibly blessed to work with a really lovely bunch of people who are driven, motivated, and as you say, want the same things. They want to create an income, but they want to create a practice that they love, but a life that they love. And I think there's, you know, we don't want to have one at the expense of the other. And it's really interesting that you say that, because I've always been of the view that when you put smart people in a room and let them talk, good stuff happens, right? And I think that's what you're referring to there. And I always believe that, you know, from the reason we start a community is so that people can understand they're in business for themselves but not by themselves. And I think, you know, that's a really nice sentiment you shared there. So thank you, mate. I'm grateful. Andrew, as we wrap up, mate, once again, thank you so much for taking the time to come and hang out with us today. You are incredibly accomplished. You are also incredibly humble. And ladies and gents, if I could just brag on Andrew's behalf for a little bit here, because he'll never brag for himself. Andrew's practice is a cracking practice. He does really good stuff. Clinically, he's all over it, and he's really, really good at that stuff. But on top of that, he runs a really good practice, and his team love him. He is able to attract and retain great people. His finances, you know, might have been a bit rocky in the early stages, but they're rock solid now. You know, he's doing a lot of really good stuff. And Andrew is the sort of guy who's incredibly humble and never kind of likes to shout from the rooftops. But let me just say thank you, mate, and congratulate you on all your accomplishments. And, you know, kudos to you, mate. You've done very well.
Thank you, Jesse.
You're a good
man. Just have to say that last little bit, couldn't have done it without everybody else too. So, you know, I'm just the man that stands here on the back of the good work of a lot of people.
Celebrate that with your team and with Jane, mate. And once again, I appreciate you taking the time, mate. You're a good man. Thank you.
Thanks, Jesse.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist podcast. For more episodes, go to drjessegreen.com/savvydentist. And to discover how to build a high-performance dental practice, visit drjessegreen.com and download the free report.